This is Neostorm, and you're listening to the Fraggin' and Laggin' podcast.
Roll back that beautiful bean footage and you'll find it.
I can't hear a thing in the game. It's like, hey, there's a friend request! Hey, there's a friend request! Hey, there's a friend request!
Alright, this bastard is on my... Okay, GTFO, bitch.
Alright, everybody, here it comes. Sit back and enjoy the Fraggin' and Laggin' podcast.
And so as that changed, so did the shows and the format change for the channel. It became more gaming centric than like celebrity interviews or talk show stuff. Like, it became more about games and video games. You know, they always had video game related content, but this became like more focused, more specific to that. And then at that same time, they had a new show that they were going to do called The Infinite Crisis Experience. I begrudgingly bring up this story because I don't want anyone to Google this stuff, but it's out there and it's going to happen eventually. So, you know, here we go. The Infinite Crisis Experience, which is, okay, now we're leading into part two of this, of the question. How did I get into this whole thing with Twin Galaxies? The Infinite Crisis Experience is a show based on a game called Infinite Crisis. Infinite Crisis was a game based on the DC Comics superheroes, such as Superman, Batman, Robin, Wonder Woman, Catwoman, you know, all the villains, Joker, Doctor Doom, that's a different, that's Marvel, you know, Lex Luthor, all of those characters in a MOBA. So it was directly competing with League of Legends and I think Dota, I'm not sure if Dota was out yet, if Valve was doing Dota yet, but I know League of Legends was a direct competitor. And League was big. League was huge at the time. But, you know, you have all your DC heroes, right? So that's going to be good. It was a great game. I loved the game. I absolutely adored the game. I was very good at the beginning of the game, I would say. Because it wasn't that popular at the time it came out. You know, a lot of League players were like, you know, not really gonna make the switch. But I was enjoying it, and the guys over at the Elite Lounge Live had a connection with Warner Brothers Studios, and they had a promo show to do for them, which became the Infinite Crisis Experience. And the premise of the show was to create a team of players that didn't know each other and weren't pro players. They were just regular people. Just make this team and then see if this team can beat pro teams in the game. That was like the premise of the show. And they were looking for contestants. I applied and I got accepted. The only issue for me.
Together with Mr. Fanatic, Imperious, Dennis the Fall, Genfo, and Rabizas, right?
Otherwise known as Polyhype.
Yeah, Polyhype.
He changed his name.
Junket, do you remember Polyhype?
We had him a few
episodes back.
Well, I wonder if he ever brought up this story.
No, he didn't, I think.
Yeah, I know. I begrudgingly bring up this story because, you know, it's one of those cringy stuff.
I'm ready to DM. I'm going to DM him later about this.
I mean, you know, there's VODs and all kinds of, there's cut downs. And it was a really, really well-produced show. Let me say that off the bat. Like, production quality was really good, especially for the time. And there weren't many gaming related reality TV shows. This is what this was. It was a reality TV show. If it was on WB or Fox or whatever, like, it would have made sense. But this is on Twitch.
Okay, I looked it up on YouTube. I just saw you with a shaved head. Yeah, with a Joker shirt on. Let's go. I'm going to watch the whole show now. I'm going to start tonight.
No. Okay. I did open Pandora's box. It's my fault.
We'll put the link for the video in the chat below, in the description below, for everyone else to enjoy it too. But go ahead.
Oh, no. Please don't. So that was, so I got accepted, but my big issue was, they had given me only like a week to get down to LA, and it was a 3-month gig.
Ooh.
So I was like, oh, wow. Well, you know, I have an entire life in New York. You know, I had a stable career in IT and I have family and friends. I have a week to just pack my bags for at least 3 months. And I had never just like left like that for that amount of time. So I had to work something out with my job where I can work remotely. And this is like the first time they ever did telecommuting work with anyone. But, you know, I was really good there and they didn't want to let me go. So I was able to keep my job. I had to say goodbye to all my friends and family, you know, and just pack my bags, pack my car, and I drove almost 3,000 miles and landed in LA for the show. And we shot the show the same day I got there. It might have been the same day when we shot the first episode. It might have been the next day, but it was that close, like, to me, like, getting over there. But yeah, I had to like leave everything behind. Which was, you know, it was tough, but I don't regret it, because of all the experiences and things that happened in my life since then were pretty remarkable. So yeah, that's how I got over there, got on the show. We did the show, but through the course of doing the show, I became closer and closer with everyone at the Elite Lounge Live. And at the time, while I was there, Jace decided to change the name of the channel to Twin Galaxies Live. And so Elite Lounge Live then became Twin Galaxies Live. And that's where the two kind of like
merged
together. Yeah. And, you know, so now you could understand where Twin Galaxy Live's origin comes from. But that's pretty much it. And so I did the Infinite Crisis experience. And while I was there, while I was befriending everybody, Jace had more ideas of more things to do with the channel and the shows and stuff like that. And he really noticed my technical capabilities and he needed somebody to perform these things that he was planning on, and so he asked me to join them and, you know, come on as an engineer. And so I came on and I started learning how to be a broadcast engineer from that point. And with my technical background, it was, you know, not very hard. I learned, you know, the ins and outs of the entertainment industry through that. And yeah, like we started producing more shows after that point. After the, you know, after that show, we did more shows. And this starts to lead more into like what I was saying about the Taunt Fest and how that started. So if we could just kind of circle back to that experience with who was getting who was getting the first H1Z1 win, for example. After that was said and done, it became, okay, who's going to get, you know, the next win? And so every time we got a win in H1, whether it was me or Jace Hall, we would post a picture of a screenshot of that win on social media. We were only using Facebook at the time. We weren't into Twitter that much, but on our Facebooks, we were like posting. I have so many posts, like every day, like I would post a screenshot of a win. And so we were racing kind of like, or just, I guess, seeing who's going to just keep doing it, because I would get a win, he would get a win. He would get a win, I would get a win. And it just was like tied up for like a long time. I'm not even sure how many months or maybe even years we were just tied up and we're just doing this back to back. But at the office, there was always smack talk. There was always taunting. Like, I would be standing behind Jace playing the match and I'd be like, oh yeah, you better not die here. You better not choke. You know, you didn't reload, or, you know, it's like, and he would do the same thing behind me, and we were just like constantly smack talking, you know, while playing the game. And like, you know, we had this system in there that Jace had come up with called the Hype Machine. And the Hype Machine was a computer that had a video, it's not a playlist, it's like a what's the best word for it? It's like a video jockey.
Yeah, I got what you're saying. And, like a, yeah.
You know, like you have like a, like, you know, Spotify or something, and then you have a list of,
yeah, they call them like VJ.
Videos you can click on.
Yeah.
Yeah, like VJ, right? So yeah. It was basically that, but like back in like 2012, 2013. And there were multiple screens throughout the office and the lounge that we had hooked up to this computer. And I don't know if you, like nowadays, if you go to a nightclub, you'll see like videos playing on multiple screens and stuff like that. But back then, this is like state of the art. And so we had videos of taunts, like different clips from movies and TV shows that were like, you know, like you could use to fuel anger or get under somebody's skin, that kind of thing. And so we would play these things while the other person is in the room on the match. There's a screen right above them with a big speaker, a loudspeaker. And we would like just like they're in the middle of a match and they're like down to the wires, like two people left, you know. Jace is sitting there. He's trying not to choke. And then like he would die or something, right? Like lose. And then on the big screens or whatever, you know, I would play something like, you know, like you suck or something. Like I don't even remember like the videos we had, but like if you could think of like some kind of meme, like you would just like play for somebody who just like got robbed in a match. Like we had that going all the time, every day. You know, somebody was on the Hype Machine doing some kind of, you know, playing something to get under somebody's skin.
Oh, I'm glad I don't have that around here. Me and Blaze.
Oh, it was amazing.
Me and Blaze would go at
it. It was amazing. So Jace got the idea at some point. Why don't we make a show? where we do this on the show. We play the game, and while the other person's in the room playing the match, we're all sitting out here commentating on it. And then to like further like get under the skin, we'll play these videos. We'll even like include on the screen a video capture of what we're playing and the audio, so that everyone else could be involved in the taunting. And thus became the Taunt Fest. Now, originally the show didn't have a contest. It didn't have rewards. There was no goal in oriented. It was just like, let's just play games and taunt each other. And, you know, have the chat join us in taunting. Right? It was a very toxic show. Very, very toxic. But in a fun way. And when we started doing it, like, I don't know who came up with the idea first, but the idea came up, why don't we see if the chat can guess where, when Jace is going to die? Wouldn't that be cool if somebody can guess? And I think we like tested it in one episode where, like, you know, people were guessing and everyone just kind of enjoyed that experience. But Jace thought, like, maybe we can give away prizes for this. Like, maybe we can give away stuff and, like, just, like, make it more entertaining that way. And I thought that was a great idea. But what were we going to give away? That was the thing. We did have a lot of merch. And, like, stuff that we had to give away. Well, not, like, give away, but, like free stuff that we get from, like, companies. It's, like, Asus or NVIDIA. Like, stuff like that. Like, those companies would give us stuff to promote. And so this is another way we could promote the stuff is by giving away these products as prizes. And so that's how we originally started giving away prizes on the show. It was like, hey, if you can guess where Neostorm is going to die, you could win an NVIDIA GTX Titan Black. So, yeah, but we were only giving away those as like the final game or the final guess of the night or whatever it was. So it wasn't like everyone was getting them, but yeah, we were giving away like some really nice prizes. You know, all of this stuff we were getting is promo stuff. So we were just like kind of like showcasing this stuff, promoting them, and then giving them away to people that were guessing correctly.
Man, that is.
So it started from that, and we had, all right, so going from that show, we decided to start an Indiegogo campaign. It was just kind of like Kickstarter, to try and like help build the channel and build Twin Galaxies website. And so we needed to come up with, I don't think they're prizes. I don't think they're called prizes. They're like rewards. There we go. Rewards, right? We had to come up with rewards to give to people who donated. And everyone was given like a chance to submit ideas. I was really big into hoodies, as you can tell.
Never. You were never wearing them on every freaking picture or video I saw of you.
Yeah. So I came up with the idea of like, well, we need, I was very adamant about this too. I was like, we need to have a Twin Galaxies hoodie as a reward. We need that. Like, that's got to happen. I wasn't thinking in-game, by the way. None of that was in-game. This is all like, I need a physical. We all need to have people wearing physical Twin Galaxies hoodies. This is just a thing. And then I also thought, like, well, wouldn't it be cool since we're friends with Daybreak, wouldn't it be cool? And we always promote their games. Wouldn't it be cool if we could, like, give away something in-game as a reward to a donator? Like, maybe he, you know, like, I was thinking big-time donation, too. Like, maybe we can give somebody a name on a storefront or a sign, like a street sign. Like, this is what I was thinking in my head. And then finally, I think Jace came up with the idea of having an in-game skin for Twin Galaxies. And I don't know if my idea of having a hoodie like encouraged that. It may have, maybe not, but like that was the first thing that we got was the Twin Galaxies in-game hoodie. And so for the low, low price of donating to the Indiegogo for $10, you were given an in-game code for the Twin Galaxies hoodie. That was like the lowest reward ever. I think it was the second lowest, actually. $5 was the lowest. But yeah, the second lowest reward we're giving. And we had a long list of rewards for like higher tiers, you know, including World Championship rings from Rick Fox, you know, NBA Championship rings was one of the rewards you can get, for example. But yeah, for the low price of $10, you can get yourself a Twin Galaxies hoodie. A black one. But people didn't really know. Like, people really didn't, like, realize the value of it at the time. So, you know, we got a lot of people who donated. And we fulfilled that. Everyone got their black hoodies. And then once that was done, and everyone had black hoodies running around and black hoodies in the game, black Twin Galaxies hoodies, all of a sudden, it became a thing. All of a sudden, everyone wanted one. But we had already finished the campaign. And so we were like telling people, you know, like, you missed it. You should have been part of the campaign. You know, that's it, you know, yada, yada. But it's like, when we were doing the show, the Taunt Fest, people would be in the chat saying, you know, I don't want the Nerf gun, or I don't want the t-shirt, you know, I want to give me a code. Can I get a code? You know? So with so many people asking for it after that point, and it blew up in popularity, we were like, okay, well, why don't we just give away codes for the hoodies as prizes? And at that point, it changed from giving actual, like, tangible physical things, which was a nightmare for fulfillment. Let me tell you, like sending a graphics card to Sweden or something, and then it gets caught in customs, like, and then we, oh my gosh, like, you know, it was a nightmare. Giving a code is like, what's your Twitch, you know, whisper your code right now. So
that was the easy way to give, like, do a giveaway. Just give a code to somebody and you're done with it, you know?
It was so much easier than that, than giving away physical prizes. So it's like, yeah, let's do that. And it just blew up. Like everyone just wanted the code. It just was that popular. And
because it was that rare, right? Like, it was really hard to get, and you had what, like, two chances to win one every show. So
yeah, the crazy thing was it really wasn't rare, but it became rare because people didn't realize that it was gonna be rare once the campaign ended. Like, it was unlimited. If you just had donated at the time, you know, if we got 1 million donations, we were giving away 1 million codes. You know, it wasn't. It only became rare as a result of stopping the campaign. Like, at that point, it was like, okay, well, now the only way you get a code is if you win it. And there's only so many matches we're going to play on the Taunt Fest. And I think at the time, we only did the Taunt Fest on Thursdays once a week. Yeah, at the time we
once a week on Thursdays, I remember, because I always had like an alarm set for when you guys went live, so I could be on the show to try to win the hoodie. I never won, but I always tried, and I guessed on Facebook, I guessed on Twitch, and I was hoping to win it. That people were like, "You have a bigger chance when you guess it on Facebook," and you know, because you did it on Facebook and on Twitch, the show, right?
Eventually, yeah. Eventually, we started doing it, which was I don't agree. I never agreed with it. It was not like Facebook was not made for streaming. At least at the time, I don't know how it is today, but at the time, it was not made for streaming, and there was so many nuances. Like number one, the timing of when you guess was a factor, right? You had to be the first one to make that guess.
Yeah.
To get the code. On Facebook, no, depending on which computer you're looking at, the order of people's guesses were different. It was never in order.
I remember it was an issue at some point that people were like...
Yeah, there is a true order and timing of things server side on Facebook. But we don't get that information. We just get, here's a list of things or, you know, posts that were coming in, and we'd get them as we got them. So it was different on every computer. You couldn't definitively, say that this person guessed first. And so that became an issue. We had to like figure out a way to work around that and fix that, and like way to work internally with Facebook. You know, I know one of the head guys over at the Facebook, streaming department. Like, it was that much of an issue. So yeah, when we went to Facebook, it was like, oh gosh, I did not want to do that, but you know, we ended up doing it. But yeah, like getting a code became a hot commodity, because maybe we gave away like maybe 4 or 5 codes a week, you know, and how many people were playing the game that wants a code, right? So it became like extremely expensive. Like I remember like people paying a lot of money for a code at a certain point in time, and it was like, whoa, what's going on, guys? This is insane. Yeah, and then, you know, I initially had to engineer the way the show was going to work, like how everything worked on the screen, you know, how people were going to guess. Like, all of this stuff had to be designed, and I had a lot of help from my team. Some people on the outside who were third-party helping the show too. Like it was a big show, and but I think it was produced pretty well. I did a lot of the engineering. I did a lot of the hosting initially, and that was because the show started off as Jace and I taunting each other, with other people just like coming by to get taunted and involved in that too. Like, sometimes we would have guests. Sometimes we didn't have guests. But yeah, like eventually, like I moved off of the producer role and try to like move out of the hosting role and more into the broadcast technician, engineering, live engineering aspect of it, like the behind the scenes kind of thing. I wanted to like. I'm not like always the kind of person that wants to be on camera. It's like sometimes it's hard for me to be on camera, but I did it because I had to do it, and I enjoyed doing it. It's just like one of those things where it's like, yeah, like I'll enjoy doing something, but I would prefer not being seen, that kind of thing. I don't know. I'm weird like that.
The behind the scenes person.
Yeah, I like meeting people. I like being out there. Like I love Twitch. I like conventions. Like, you know, I love that stuff. But like, I don't know, something when it comes to camera and like, you know, like I don't know. It's just weird for me. But yeah, that's how I got in there. And then, you know, there's a lot of stories. I could go on and on and on and on and on.
We'll save that for the second episode.
maybe we should do in the second episode about the Tauntfest stories, you know? But I remember you were on the show, and there was also a part where you had people that could make funny memes or pictures or drawings, and they could like win a hoodie, you know, and that was really funny, and the fat neck joke always, you know. So
yeah,
do you know what the fat neck joke is, Junk?
No.
Explain him. Neo, please explain.
Yeah,
him.
So Todd Roy, who eventually came on to produce the show, also came on and hosted the show as well. And there's a lot of people who worked on the show. But Todd really wanted to take the show to higher level in production, you know? So one of the things he's good at is comedy. And he even does stand up in LA. He does. I don't know if he's still doing it because of COVID, but I know that right before COVID he was doing it. So, but he does stand up, and you know, he's just a really funny guy. Like, if you ever hang out with him, if you ever meet him in person, like, he's just a funny, funny guy. He's always coming up with funny stuff.
I can confirm that. I met you both, so
I can confirm.
he was really funny. That's true.
I don't know where. Let me think about this, because at the office we never joked about his neck. I never thought he had a fat neck. It wasn't like a thing at all, you know. It was like, where is this coming from? Somebody in chat at some point said that he had a fat neck. Maybe it was one of those art submissions. I can't remember exactly who said it first or where it came from, but I think Todd saw that and thought to himself, I don't have a fat neck, but it definitely sounds funny. I'm just going to take that and run with it. And, you know, I don't think it was said in jest. I think it was whoever was saying it in chat was probably being toxic.
Probably.
But sometimes that's the best fuel, you know? If you want to get back at a heckler, right? You use their own ammunition against them. And so, like, especially when you're self-deprecating, like, this humor is, like, a lot of it is self-deprecating. So that even works better for him, because now he has something else to use. And so he took that, and he's like, I don't have a fat neck. What do you mean? You don't, you know, and he made it seem like he's being affected by it. You know, obviously he's not actually, because no one thinks he has a fat neck, you know, outside of that. So it's like, you know, he played that role of like, I don't have a fat neck. And then people were like, yeah, you got a fat neck, you know, and they started sending in, right? He instigated, he encouraged it a lot. And now we got art submissions coming with like these crazy, like, here's a giraffe with Todd's head pasted on the photoshopped on the top of it, you know, like that kind of thing. And it was great. It was a lot of laughs. Me personally, I never really liked the fat neck joke, because, you know, it was for me, it kind of like was silly at the beginning, but then got old.
Yeah, it lasted really long, that joke. Oh my
god. Yeah, I don't, and I figured like at some point people were just gonna like grow out of it, but it just kept going. I was like, oh my god, here we go, another fat neck thing, isn't it? But yeah, that's how that happened.
If I can, like, on top of your head, what are like the top five guests you got in your mind that you guys had?
Jamie Lee Curtis was number one off my head, I have to say. And she had come on. She played She got a lot of kills, and then and that was pretty amazing. I think there's probably clips of that on the internet. But that's, let's see, top five. Let's see. I want to say when Echo Fox came on was another good time. Just to see them compete against all the stream snipers. Like anytime we had the pro team, so Echo Fox came by.
What I do remember about the Jamie Lee Curtis one is the one where she's taking away the prices behind Todd.
Yeah. There's a little clip of her.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's stealing all the equipment. All the stuff. Yeah. That was pretty funny.
But I mean, for me, the show was like one of the first good shows on Twitch. You know, you had like streamers and doing their thing, but in my opinion, I may be wrong, but like show wise, like I kind of miss something like that, you know. Even now, like there are some, you know, other production companies doing shows on Twitch, but they never grasp my attention long enough, you know. And yeah. you guys, it was still, it was a talk show and it was funny and you were, you know, taunting each other and it had a whole thing going on and after that I never really felt like, you know, I think it's probably one of the only shows I kept watching every week, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of sad. It's kind of sad. I do feel the same way, and I find it very weird too. Like, I think it may have been like a week or two ago, I was talking to somebody about it. I was like, you know, it's weird that this kind of stuff isn't happening even till today. Now I get it, like with COVID, that maybe there were shows in production or gonna, you know, being designed, but COVID probably just stopped all that, and like, because, you know, everyone's doing online stuff now. You know, Twitch Rivals is kind of like a thing where we have like multiple personalities coming on and competing. But it doesn't really feel like a show like we're used to. You know, it's just like kind of like an esports show where we got commentators on the tournament and then, you know, that's it, right? We don't really have like too much fun. You know, it's mostly like competitive. You know, it's unfortunate because Twitch, I feel like, is like the perfect place for this format. Or for this kind of content. And I just find it really weird that these stuff, you know, I have a lot of ideas and I don't always like to talk about this stuff because I'm like, you know, somebody's going to just take my ideas and like, you know, make something with it. But yeah, it's weird. Like there's a lot of stuff on TV that sucks, right? Let's be honest. Like you turn on TV, you're like, switching the channel all the time, right?
I honestly never watch TV, only for like my soccer team or something, you know, that's when I watch TV, or when something really special is happening and it's on TV. And even if it's on TV, if I can catch it on online on Twitch or whatever, I'll probably be watching it on my PC. It's gone that far that I'm really not interested in what happens on TV anymore.
If it's a show that you like, you'll probably watch a VOD or something, right? Or
Yeah.
Or on like Hulu or Netflix or something. I mean,
you'll watch it when you want to watch it, right? There's no commercials. I don't know, maybe, but like you can decide, like, oh yeah, I don't have to be home at 8 p.m. so I don't miss my show, right? You could watch it whenever you have free time.
Hit it with the TiVo. Hit it with the TiVo.
This might be a little controversial, but I feel like Twitch is kind of turning into that for me. Like maybe it's just me, but when I go on Twitch nowadays, I'm just like flicking through the channels. Like I have streamers that I watch, and when I watch these streamers, like I watch them. I'm not switching, you know? I'm like, I'm here, you know, enjoying the experience. But like when they're not on and I'm just like looking for another streamer to watch, like a lot of times it feels like I'm just changing the channel.
And it's, I mean, it's your Twitter account says hashtag the viewage, so I can probably figure out who you do watch, right?
Oh, yeah,
you know. Do you know what it means, right, Junket?
Yeah.
So no. CD and the third.
Oh, yeah. CD and the third, man.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, I'm sorry. I'm a little bit out of it today. Long day at work.
He came up with the viewage and stuff like that. You know, that's what he calls his constituents. But yeah, like he's my favorite Twitch streamer, you know. Everyone knows that. So it's not an unknown thing. I have a lot of streamers that I love, you know. Linden's another one you know we spoke of earlier, but yeah, I always love C's. C's is the best. Yeah, if C's is on, you know, I'm watching and that's it. That's all there is to it. But like, you know, let's say none of your favorite streamers are on, you're just gonna try and like find something to watch. And I'm always looking at these shows, you know, whether it's Twitch Rivals or something else, and it just seems like it's relatively nothing new. It's all kind
saturated.
Of the same.
Everything is saturated. Everyone's doing what everyone's doing to catch that lightning in the bottle, I think. You know? Like the Taunt Fest stood out, you know? There's nothing really that's, like Blaze said, that's nothing like that, you know? So, you know, kudos to you guys
thinking
for
the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, if everyone's doing the same thing, why hasn't anyone done something like the Taunt Fest? You know, I think about that all the time. I think about it all the time. It's just weird to me that hasn't happened yet. We need shows like that. We need more shows like that.
Blaze, we're going to do it. We'll come up with something.
We already got Neostorm on board.
The pay would suck.
I mean, you were part of the H1Z1 league as well, right? In some way or another, or am I wrong?
Well, let's okay. So this is another story, but I'll try to make it quick.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the times, back in the days before even before TwitchCon, even before not before TwitchCon, before what was it?
The H1Z1 Invitational or King of the Kill?
No, it was the fight for the crown.
Fight for the crown. Yeah.
So even before Fight for the Crown, right? Jace, Clegg, myself, we'd be sitting around just thinking about, like, wouldn't it be great if people could watch H1Z1 on TV? Wouldn't it be cool? Like, we're sitting here watching other people play, you know, whether it was in person or on Twitch, and it's so exciting, you know. You want to see the, you know, person get the chicken dinner. Like, it's always exciting, even for the viewer. It would be cool, like, to put this stuff on TV, and watching the first Twitch Invitational for H1Z1. I think Ninja One and Grimms, I think. Those two matches. I think Ninja won the first and Grimms won the second one, I want to say. I remember watching that, and like, we're watching that and we're like, this is so hype. This would be amazing to watch on television. And so we would always be thinking about that stuff, but nothing was ever really done until we were like, okay, we're going to do something. And then we came up with Fight for the Crown. And before Fight for the Crown, there was the second H1Z1 Invitational, and the second one had the first H1Z1 pro player or pro team. I think it was a team. Yeah, we had a team. It was the It was Echo Fox, and Echo Fox was the first team to have an H1Z1 team, or the first esports org to have an H1Z1 team, and it was Mini True, Braddock. I'm missing some names here. So I'm going back.
God,
a
I'm trying
bit.
To think.
Jerk Chicken.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking. I was like Jerk Chicken.
There were two more, and I'm drawing a blank right now. And it's gonna hit me later, but
Blaise is probably already Googling it right now, so just he'll have your answer.
I'm actually not Googling it at the moment.
you're the tech guy, Blaise. You failed us. No.
In either case, the point was like this was an invitational with a bunch of streamers and personalities, but also including this team of pro players, right? We even got Daybreak to create the Echo Fox shirt, which was like the first esports org skin in H1Z1. It wasn't actually like the Echo Fox jersey or whatever, like, but it was like a t-shirt with Echo Fox logo on it. It was pretty cool. I liked it. In either case, this was an exciting show to watch because, like, oh, okay, you got these, you know, personalities, streamers, semi-pros, and, you know, and then actual pros, and only pros because, let's be honest, because they're getting paid to play the game. There weren't any tournaments that they won for the game as an org at the time because there just weren't any. You know, there was scrims and, you know, chicken dinner server and all that stuff, but like an official sanctioned tournament hadn't happened yet up until that point. And the invitational was the closest thing. So after that invitational and watching it and everything, we were like, yeah, no, we gotta take this and actually make a tournament. And so we came up with the Fight for the Crown. At this point, esports orgs had picked up on H1Z1's popularity and made their own teams. And we had this big tournament where Jace came up with a great idea to make this stage a circular stage where all the teams can compete, but their backs are to each other so they can't cheat. And that's how we got that infamous, amazing skull stage. Was part of Jace's idea, and it was, I think the first iteration was it 80 computers or it might have been less. It might have been less. Maybe it was like 50. Just count how many teams were in Fight for the Crown. That's how many computers there were. It was less than what we had for the H1 Pro League, but. Even still, at the time, that was a remarkable achievement. I don't think there were any other esports tournaments with that many players on stage at the same time competing up until that point. And we aired that on the WPIX, which actually ended up beating out hockey and NHL in the same time slot. At the same time, so we did pretty well.
That's an achievement, right? That's an achievement if I think about it. So,
Yeah, no, it was actually better than we expected on TV. It kills me to this day that we never like continue trying to do that, but it is what it is, right? From that moment. We had like kind of like the basis of like a show and an esport that could be because it still wasn't an esport. It still weren't really tournaments. This is like it was a tournament, but it was, you know, kind of like an exhibition. And then we had the invitationals and then there were the tournaments that Daybreak were doing. And they had started doing tournaments. I think they started doing them at DreamHack. I believe that's where they started doing it. But it was, you know, it was a tournament that they produced. So what Twin Galaxies was trying to do was create a tournament that was not by the developer and was a separate party. So this way the game or the tournament isn't compromised just to support agendas of the developer, whatever they were, right? And maybe there weren't any, but this is like the general idea behind Twin Galaxies, right? Is to support the players, not the game companies. Because if you think about it, game companies are trying to just sell the games, and that matters more than the player's satisfaction or the competitor's satisfaction or even maybe even the legitimacy of the whole thing, right? Sometimes it gets compromised in the sake of selling games. And so the hope is to get away from that by having a third party do the tournament. So that's how the H1 Pro League started, right? It was like, let's do a tournament or create a league that is separate from the game company so that, you know, they can't mess with things with the tournament. It'll be as fair as possible for the competitors. And so we took what we learned from the Fight for the Crown, like as far as all the technical stuff, production stuff, and then we built upon that to create the H1 Pro League. Now, I wasn't involved in the league process at all. I was only involved in the technical stuff. So, like, you know, hooking up the stage, getting all the engineering done on the back end, like making sure everything worked perfectly, you know, and everything got to the server that it needed to go to as far as like streaming goes, right? So that's where I come in as far as like H1 Pro League. Oh yeah, and I also refereed. But that's also part of like, okay, I got a referee because, you know, I'm also there in case one of the computers gets busted for whatever reason. I'm probably the best one to fix it. So that's also why I refereed. But yeah, like that's all I really did for the H1 Pro League.
Okay. And like, okay, so after the H1 Pro League, H1Z1 like really kind of started dying, right? And
like it was before the Pro League.
It was before the Pro League, and everybody was hoping that the Pro League would kind of revive the game, let's say. And
I think some people were. I don't think everyone really were hoping for that, because I think some people were, but like, I think players...
it was like the last grasp people were holding for the game to not die, you know, like totally die. What it did in the end, anyways.
Maybe that was the case for a lot of people. I can't speak for everyone, but I know a lot of people that I knew on the scene in the game who were players didn't really get that feeling from the Pro League. They were excited about it, but we all felt like the same way, kind of like, if the game doesn't change, it's not going to get better, you know? No matter, you know, how many, like, roses and butterflies they add to the game, you know, or how much they sweeten how it looks, if we're not enjoying it as much as we want to enjoy it, then, you know, it is what it is. It's not going to change, and I think that's kind of like the way a lot of people thought as far as like on the ground. Maybe investors and you know, other people like hoped that this would help the game, but I don't know if like the regular like players were really hoping that was going to help. It would definitely help if you're thinking as far as like bringing more eyes to the game.
Or new players.
At the time, me personally, I was kind of like worried. Like, to me personally, because I was a player, and I had been worrying about the game for quite some time. I think one of the big things that had happened before that was the previous Invitational. They had stated that they were going to bring back the Z1 map, because at the time, like, everyone was asking for it.
I remember. And I was one of the ones saying, like, even if they bring it back, it's never going to be the same again. So I was not really a guy that was like, bring the Z1 map back. While at some point there was like this whole movement kind of feeling that everybody was like, bring back Z1, bring back Z1. It will change the game again. And I was like,
That was the big thing at that TwitchCon. I remember it was the big thing. And when they announced it, everyone was like cheering, like, yay. And I wasn't one of the people cheering, because I was like, this isn't what the game needs. It's cool, but I like the new map and I don't want to see it go. So for me, it was kind of like, you know, like, I guess the people, the squeaky people, you know, the squeaky wheel won, but I wasn't the squeaky wheel at all. I was enjoying the new map, you know. I didn't like the fact that they were going to take it away.
When they introduced Auto Royale, I really enjoyed that game mode, and then they took it out, and I was like, oh, why is it gone? You know, it's like a change from just the grinding of the game, you know, like, it was actually a fun way to, you know, connect with the game and maybe bring in other people that didn't, you know, grind the game that hard, but they could play like a fun game mode on it, you know. So I actually liked, for example, Auto Royale, so I thought it was a good idea.
I think Auto Royale was really well designed. Same here. I had a lot of fun playing it. It was just a fun getaway, a fun experience. You didn't really have to worry about too much. You know, you started off with guns. You didn't really have to worry about loot. You know, it was just nonstop action. It was good.
Nonstop action, yeah. That was for sure.
It was good.
We were four players yelling at each other from start to end. Go there. Shoot him.
Watch out, where are you driving? Oh no, we're flipping. Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. I actually ended up playing that not too long ago on Mama Wolfie server. I think they were doing like a fun mode one time. But you know, what I heard all the time, unfortunately, from other players was that they didn't enjoy it, and it took too much production time away from that. They should be doing other stuff, you know. I don't know what other stuff they were thinking in their head, but you know, that was the general consensus. It's like, we got all these issues and you guys gave us this, you know. People are still harping on like thing, they want PS3 to come back.
One of the mistakes, in my opinion, was that they wanted to do it too good, you know. They wanted to listen to everybody, try to, you know, be interactive with the community and do what the community asked for. But like, there's Fortnite, for example, they didn't listen to anything from their community. They just did it, and look how the game actually exploded. And same thing with Warzone, how they just do whatever they want to do, and people have been yelling for a year for a better anti-cheat, and they don't care. They just keep, you know, adding stuff to the shop and doing other stuff. People are complaining about the rose skin. They don't care. The rose skin stays in, you know. I mean, and if it would have been back then Daybreak, they would probably have taken out the rose skin or changed it or whatever, because they would have listened to the community. And I think what was their strength at some point, listening to the community, became also in a way their downfall. You know what I'm saying? But that's my personal opinion, you know.
Yeah, I have an opinion on this. I definitely let me give you my opinion on this. Okay, so I agree with some things there and disagree with some other things. I don't 100% believe that they listened to everything that the community was telling them. They were They were taking things that the community were saying to heart, but I don't think they were always acting on the things that people were saying in the community. I don't think that was the case. I don't think the case is for Epic and for Activision that they did well because they didn't listen to the community. I think it actually hurts them. They did well because of the games. And the games were already, they were already made to do well. Like for Fortnite, right? Before Fortnite came out, I had been telling people left and right, if Disney were to ever make a battle royale, it would be the most popular game ever. Obviously, you won't ever see a Disney battle royale. Maybe you will. Maybe I just gave away. I opened Pandora's box again. I gave away one of my ideas, but maybe you will. But like, you know, cute characters on the screen, as long as there's no blood or gore, we can get a wave of sending it to a larger audience, right? Just think about that, right? You're limiting your audience by having gore and blood, you know? You already got to put an age restriction on your game, like we talked about earlier. Take that away, or make it even broader, and you can sell more copies of the game. So what Fortnite did, which was like genius, was make everything look cute, make all the characters look very cartoony, very, very Disney-esque. If we're talking like Pixar, later Disney, right? And I saw Fortnite and I was like, this game is gonna explode just based on the art. That's it. That's what that's. And on the top, on top that they can sell to a younger audience, it's gonna explode. And as a result, we see what happened. And I don't think that's an accident. I don't think it's because they didn't listen to the community. It's because they said they took all the things that they saw from other BRs. Like, you know what's cool when they do this dance in the game, in H1Z1, when you can do this little emote, right? That's cool. We should put that in Fortnite. But you know, why don't we just actually take like current dances that we can find people doing, like, you know, look at this person on what was it? Not Vice. What was the name of that app called before TikTok?
I wasn't even into TikTok.
Vine.
Okay.
Right. So they'll take this dance, this Vine dance, and then like put it in the game. And you know, the kids love that stuff. They chew that stuff up. Let's be honest.
Junkat, what's your favorite dance to do when you guys win or kill somebody?
Kitty cat thing. Yeah, I'm a kitty, kitty, kitty. I'm a cat.
Oh my god!
It's like so toxic. It's so toxic. I would be pissed off. But that's our thing. So
yeah. So I think that's that. You know, and then with Activision, it's Call of Duty. Call of Duty is an IP that already has a huge following, because a lot of people, believe it or not, don't play games on a computer, they play it on the console.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And so they're already used to Call of Duty. This is just another thing that they're gonna get and play.
True. Plus the strength of cross-platform playing with your friends, finally, you know.
That's huge, right? That is giant.
And not only that, consoles have progressed to be almost like small little computers. So it's cheaper to buy that versus a PC nowadays.
Yeah, you know, depending on the games that you play, it might be, you know, wiser to just get a console and just play games on a console, right? But they already had that player base just waiting. Right. If you could imagine the amount of people that play on consoles that H1Z1 could not have. Right. Eventually, they did make a PS4 port of H1Z1, but that was later. Right. That was after Fortnite came out. And even then, it wasn't cross-platform. It was, it's almost like a different game when you play it. So they're not actually getting that same player base. You know, Epic was they were extremely smart in not only porting it to consoles but also portable devices. So, you know, I don't think like the game's actual design was all like responsible for how well the game did. I think a lot of it had to do with the art, the media, and the fact that they were able to put it on so many systems and make it so accessible to not just adults but kids to play. They were just going to kill the market, and that's what they did. They just destroyed the market right there.
And like I think you touched base on it perfectly, is that not only do they make it visually pleasing, like aesthetically pleasing for the eyes, is that they made it cross-platform. So not only on PC, all consoles, you could play it on mobile. I mean, who knows what else? Etch-a-Sketch or whatever, who knows? They opened it up for everything, you know? So now you look at like Activision, you know, now that's cross-platform too, you know. I mean, so Fortnite, as much as people say they can't stand it, they are annoyed with it, they did something that no one ever did before. They made it cross-platform.
So yeah, so you know, when it comes to H1, they did make some made some not so great choices, right? And we could speculate that perhaps it was because they were listening to the community. We could also speculate that perhaps they were taking things community was saying to heart and maybe try to like work around these things. I don't know exactly what happened over at Daybreak. I didn't work at Daybreak, but I do remember when they made the combat update. I remember not really truly understanding why they were changing the game so much, because if they were, because at the time the competitor was PUBG, I didn't feel like it was similar to PUBG in at all, or like at least getting more similar like PUBG. I feel like there were two different kind of games. It just made it feel more, I guess, action oriented and less like strategic. I don't know. The thing about the bloom really bothered me, because you took away that element of like expert marksmanship, you know? Like, I have a perfect two tap, and now I'm just rolling the dice every time I try my perfect two tap. So I'm just going to spam more and hoping to get a kill. And it just became like a spam fest. You know, the guns fired faster, so you could spam faster. I think they were like,
How was that mini gun called again that they introduced, like the MP, was it an MP5 kind of thing, or I don't know. It was like, it was so random. I don't know what
you mean.
Was
the smaller gun, the submachine gun?
Yeah, I think it was the MP7. Okay. Wasn't it MP7 maybe?
It wasn't MP7. It was called the Hellfire.
The Hellfire.
It was an MP7, yeah.
I hated that gun. I didn't see, you know, when you come from the beginning of the game with all the skill-based shooting, and then you introduced that gun, and people could like randomly jump in front of you and just go like, and they didn't even know the spray pattern or anything, but still kill you. I was like, this feels so different, you know? Like, I did like a shotgun, headshots, you know, and the randomness with shotguns in a way, but still a shotgun felt like, okay, I got killed by a shotgun in the face, you know? But like, yeah, I don't know. And I remember how they changed many times how the AK worked. At some point, the AK was like a submachine gun, you know, close by. So,
yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, I do remember that. The MP7, it was a weird entry because it didn't really fit into like any particular like. It wasn't like a good long range weapon. It only like really felt good up close, but then it felt too good at some situations. Like
yeah,
it made certain engagements trivial. Like if you knew you had the person like wounded at all, like they don't even have to be low, just like you know you wounded them, you can just like rush up to them, jump out, and then unload a full MP7 clip into them. You know, you can start at that point rolling the dice in your favor because you know they have a chance of missing the perfect one-tap shotgun against your, you know, full Lammy or whatever, right? But you have a lot of chances to hit with your MP7, and they already got hurt, so you have a really good chance of winning that altercation. So 9 times out of 10, the person would rush and kill you, and then you felt like, you know, I didn't really have a chance to counterplay that. And so I think that the MP7 kind of lost or kind of like made the gameplay different. I don't know necessarily if it was like a bad thing, but then, you know, it definitely doesn't feel good on the other end, right? Like you can't really have this fight with somebody. Like if they just tapped you once and they're rushing to you, it's like, oh, here we go, I'm just gonna die here. It's like, well, what do I do? You know, there's different things you can do, but to a lot of the player base, it's gonna be annoying. And just like I said earlier, like when I'm fighting somebody and I don't take the standard AR to AR, you know, fight, you know, shootout style gameplay, like automatically, like you're not playing fair, or you're trash, or you know, you ruin somebody's day. And it's like, you know, you're just using the tools in the game to a more effective way. Maybe the MP7 was too effective in certain ways. It definitely wasn't great from a distance, that's for sure.
No.
But yeah, maybe it wasn't. Maybe it just wasn't. It was too great at a short distance.
Yeah. So
yeah, there were a lot of guns that they put in and they took out.
Like
one of the pistols
is
kind of
like
redundant.
You said, it doesn't really. Some things just didn't really make sense anymore to the long time players. You know, the ones that like really grinded the game, and yeah.
Yeah, I'm so upset, or I'm still upset that they broke third person recurve bow cocking with the combat update and never fixed it. And most players and most people who have played the game don't know what I'm talking about. But if you're in third person, it still happens today. But if you're in third person and you go to recock your bow with another arrow, re-notch it, sorry, you will notice that your character doesn't do anything, even though you're holding down the button for about 2 seconds, and then the bow will get cocked. However, if you go into first person and you do it, it's immediate. It's as soon as you press the button, you notch the bow.
I did not know that. Yeah, I'm one of the ones that didn't notice.
Yeah, because nobody uses the recurve. Everyone uses the crossbow. If they're going to use an arrow, right? Everyone just picks up the crossbow. Or they're used to using it in first person. Because you use the crossbow in first person. But when they, you know, I was an E-tip pro, right? And when they did that, I was so upset. I was like, I don't want to use a crossbow. Yeah, I'm going to use the bow. And then I just stopped using E-tips for a little while after that. I eventually got into the crossbow, eventually, like, you know, mastered that. But before that, I was just like a recurve, like, expert. I can shoot a recurve and like pinpoint somebody from hundreds of yards away. But yeah, like, they never fixed that.
So where you're at the, you know, you've done the H1Z1 Pro League, and what did you actually do after that? I kind of lost you from there. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what you've been doing since then.
Since the Pro League,
to close off the this episode with you, I want to, you know, close it off, okay, and have a nice ending. But I actually wonder what's been going on with you the last few years.
Yeah. Sure. Since the Pro League, I've been doing other shows, other kinds of content. I did a few gaming things. I worked on the Fortnite Invitational, a lot of back-end stuff. You know, when it comes to live engineering, broadcast engineering, stuff like that, I've been doing a lot of stuff in the background, in the back-end. Just nothing that's front-facing, so you don't see me much. I started streaming last year, but I haven't streamed much, and it's only been H1Z1, to be honest. I did stream a little bit of World of Warcraft, but not... Let's be honest, no one really wants to watch somebody play World of Warcraft unless they're, like, Asmongold, you know? So I don't really stream World of Warcraft as a result, but, yeah. H1Z1, right now, I'm not playing it because of cheaters. That's my biggest issue with the game, is cheaters. It was never the changes to the game. I always try to adapt to the changes. I may not like them, I may complain about them, but I'll still play the game. But cheating, even like I said with CSGO from many years ago, like, it puts a bad taste in your mouth. It makes, like, the fun, it just takes all the fun out of the game. And so, like it's hard for me to play, and then, like, I see somebody, like, floating around above my head, like, and, you know, it's like, okay, this isn't for me, you know? It's like, I'm just going to put this down for now. So I haven't been playing H1Z1 for a while because of the cheating. I hope that they do something about that. I know, you know, we have the new company looking into it, EG7, and what they're going to do moving forward. I'm hopeful that some good will come, but until it happens, like, it's just hard to play the game. This is hard. So I haven't been playing that, but, you know, I will, as soon as the cheating is, like, subsided or taken out. I'm definitely, you'll see me playing H1 again. Like, a lot of people will see me in there, like, "Whoa, I didn't know you still play." It's like, yeah, definitely still play a game. I love H1. I think I'll always love H1. But besides that, I've just been in the background. You could always check me out when I do stream. You probably should follow me just in case.
I think I already follow you. So, but I think anyways, Junkat will put all your info down below, right, Junkat?
Thank you.
Yeah. I get all that stuff covered. Even the YouTube video, that'll be in there.
Yeah, take, just remove any Infinite Crisis experience. So just leave that out.
No, that's the video she was talking about.
No. I won't. I wouldn't do that to you, man, Neo.
We're not going to do it. I think anybody who is curious like me would have already watched it while they were listening to this episode. So,
but it's like...
My gamer tag is Neostorm X. That's what I remember from the show.
Please no. Please no.
I'm the one that does the editing and stuff, Neo. Don't worry about it. I do all the dirty work. Blazes, he's like the figured person, so don't worry. You're safe. But I think what you reiterate is, like, there isn't a game that captivates anybody. And that there's a lot of people that built their career. You heard that? I don't know if you did. That captivate their audience and a player base, and people that actually like watching people play it, like H1Z1. And I don't think there'll be another game like it. I mean, there's all the other battle royales that are out right now, but there's this, like, I remember, like, the two sounds that you love to hear the most in H1Z1 is the dink and squish, There's not another sound that you know when you hear dink, squish, you're like, oh yeah, oh, I got you now. Well, I didn't get to say that a lot, but you know, people that were really good at the game, like you guys, got to, but like sounds like that, like the dink, the squish, the big siren, the sound of the gas ring pushing you in, and like you said, also the car mechanics. Like, there's nothing like that, and I'm really glad that games like that came around, because then we would be able to be introduced to people like you, Neostorm. So thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you.
But here's the fun fact: you're not off that easy, because we do a thing this season called two random questions, one for me, one from Blaze. So it could be about anything and everything, little short, sweet answers. And before we go any further and we go into this, you guys, make sure you guys are showing Neostorm all that love. We'll have all his links in the description below. Follow him, support him, because, you know, he knows his shit. Let's keep it real. He knows the stuff, and he helped develop one of the greatest shows that was on Twitch. So, Blaze, you want to do your first question? Or you want me to do it?
No, I'll do it. But if I would want to make a...
You're gonna go first?
Yeah, I never do it. I know. I an easy one would be like, what would you change from your past? His answer would be, I would not go on the Infinity Crisis experience. So I'm not gonna ask him that, but
no regrets. No regrets.
No.
No regrets.
Okay, if you could bring Tauntfest back. First of all, would you, in a way, bring it back? And in what way would you bring it back? With what game or what thing?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. Yes, I would absolutely bring it back if I could. Now, the second part of that question is rather difficult, because I
mean, you could say Warzone or whatever.
I could, but you know, I don't enjoy these games, so that's what makes it difficult.
Maybe random
and
games.
Not to say these are bad games, these are actually really good games. I just don't enjoy playing them or even watching them. I don't think they work for Tauntfest either. That's the thing. The Tauntfest needs more than 100 players in the match. Let's be honest. You want to have enough people guessing. You want to not have enough numbers to guess. You need more numbers. And I think H1 really had a good spot when it was hitting 180, 200 players. Like, that was a really good spot. 150 started. It was okay at 150, but 100. I noticed when we were doing the show live, when we would only get like 100 players, like toward the end, it was not as exciting to guess. Like, the numbers are limited. And any guesses beyond the top 10 didn't work, because we had a thing where if the person playing was in the top 10, then you get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir. So as far as which game to put, I don't think there's a game available right now that will support the Tauntfest needs. I don't think so. Maybe I could be wrong. I don't know all of the BRs that are out there. It would have to be a BR or some sort of last man standing type game where that would make sense to guess a number. It would have to have more than 100 players at least. And yeah, I don't think the games today really support that. I honestly don't think so. Also, what I would want to do with the show is make it so that stream sniping is okay. This is how we originally started Tauntfest. We encouraged the viewers to stream snipe us and try to kill us. We asked them to, you know. We said, if you can kill one of us and guess the number that you killed, that we would die on at the same time, you were something special, right? That was an extra special feat to perform. Eventually, Daybreak asked us to to remove that encouragement because it produced more encouragement on other people's streams and they were
getting streams. Imagine EU guys using VPNs trying to get on the, like, you know, it was, but yeah, you could select US and then go and hope you jump in your game, right? Like, you're ready to press that button to be able to be in the same game. I remember that.
You know, people were dying to get in, you know, hammering at the door. But yeah, I would definitely want to make it so that we could encourage that, to ask people to stream snipe us, and maybe even provide a different incentive, maybe another kind of reward for stream snipers, you know, because that added more excitement, not only for the viewers and the players, but the people on the show, you know, the guests and stuff. Like, that was always amazing and fun, like, to see you're being chased by, like, 6 or 7 cop cars behind you. You know, that was always amazing to see. I would want that. And I don't know if, like, we can get that support right now, because this is a big stand against stream sniping, obviously. But the show would support it. I would definitely want the show to support it. I would love if H1Z1 could come back, get the player base that it had. I mean, I seen the player base on EU servers that would support the show 100%, because they were getting full lobbies like every day, up until like cheating started to take over, right? But if we can get rid of all the cheating, have that large player base, like 150 players, like it I would definitely bring it back with H1Z1. And yeah, like, prizes, right? That's the thing. I would need prizes, and unfortunately I don't have anything to give away right now. I'm sorry, but I would have to work with the
you can give away a junk cat for a day that he comes and cleans people's houses.
Come on, man. I'm trying to get a graphics card still, so we know that.
Somebody's looking for a nanny.
All right, so here's my question. Go ahead. It's the most debated question, and I'm surprised it hasn't came up in this podcast. Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Let me DM Pineapples right now. Let me ask him. Let's see what he says.
I know what he would say.
Yep.
Well, look, does it not belong in pizza is the better question, right? Because you have to ask that question first. Why would you not want it on pizza? And if you could answer that question, then, you know, you have your answer. But honestly, me personally, here's the thing, right? You have to understand this in culinary arts, right? And maybe you have to be older. Your taste buds have to be more developed to understand this. But you need, like, when you add some savory to a sweet, it enhances the sweet, and if you add some sweet to a savory, it enhances the savory, right? I don't know if you've guys ever done this before, but like salted caramel, for example, right? There's salt on your caramel sweet, and it adds that enhanced flavor to it. I prefer when there's raisins in my rice. It's a very Indo South Asian thing, but I love that. I love raisins, especially the bigger raisins, because it adds this little hint of sweetness to the salty fried rice, right? It adds that. So pineapple, what it does on pizza is very similar. It adds a hint of sweetness and a little bit of that tart to the savory, salty goodness of the pizza. It adds that hint, that little extra flavor. It actually enhances the pizza. It brings out more of the flavor. I personally don't put pineapple on pizza because I don't want the pineapple on my pizza. But that's like a personal thing, because I don't like pineapple on things. I like pineapple separate. I don't even like when pineapple's in a fruit salad, I'll eat the pineapple separate from the rest of the fruit. It's just because it's got this really strong, robust flavor that I don't really want to mix. But I do mix it in drinks. I do put it in other stuff. But yeah, I don't I don't personally like it on pizza, but I understand why people put it on pizza. 100%. I just wouldn't. I just don't do it. That's all. But yeah. That's my take on it. So it can go on pizza. It's definitely hits one of those flavor requirements. But yeah, you can put other stuff on pizza. You don't need to put pineapple. But I'll turn people off if I say I put Alfredo sauce.
I send a picture to Junk and he's going to talk about it right now.
No, I'm not going to bring it up. He puts mayo on pizza. I will not talk about that disgusting.
You can put mayo on pizza. What's wrong
mayo
with that?
Mayo pizza's tasty.
It just caught me off guard. It was just random.
But the thing is, when you think about mayo on pizza, people forget, like, you don't have tomato sauce also on the pizza. You either replace the tomato sauce with the Alfredo sauce, for example, and then you can make a Caesar chicken salad pizza, right? You don't put the tomato sauce, you put the Alfredo sauce, you put the lettuce, you put the chicken, you put the cheese, and you cook it, and boom. You got
Bob's
your chicken
your
Alfredo.
Uncle. There you go. So, okay. Yeah, this, you guys, I think because all three of our loves for H1Z1, I think this could be like a 24-hour podcast. You know? Sure. So, but you guys, once again, all of Neo's stuff will be in the description down below. Make sure you guys are showing that support. Stay tuned with him, what is going on. We'll have his Twitter, his Twitch information. Anything else that you're on? TikTok, Instagram, or?
Right now, nothing else. Just Twitter, YouTube. YouTube, definitely. So I'll be uploading more content there soon. I also make video game music. I forgot to mention that. You could probably find it out there. I have a couple tunes in a game called Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo HD Remix. So you'll probably see some stuff like that related coming out soon on YouTube. So yeah, it's just Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and
Twitch.
I guess Snapchat, but I don't really use it.
I don't use Snapchat anymore. I've been teasing Junkhead
it's one of those things that faded out, right? It's like a phase. It's like not, you know.
It's like anything, it's gonna come back.
I use Snapchat to send dick pics to my viewers, you know.
I knew you were gonna say that.
I always drew like a fake dick. I drew it and then I just put it on there and all my viewers went to watch it and they were like, "Oh, you got us." And I was like, "Yay." Yeah. You know,
he sent me one time. He goes, "Here's a
your
dick pic. It's a picture of
artwork,
me."
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or I did like take a picture of somebody and like Junkhead and like put like an arrow and like wrote dick pic, you know?
He's ahead of his time.
Yeah. And by the way, if you miss Neostorm, just go back to the old Tauntfest episodes on Facebook or there you can still find them and you can watch him sit there with his like Twin Galaxy hoodie and his Doom or whatever cap that he has from his collection, you know?
I think they're still airing the Taunt Fest on TV in South America. I'm not sure if it's a channel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Let's go. Yeah. Let's bring Taunt Fest. Damn. Bring Taunt Fest back.
Bring it back.
Taunt Fest back. So anyway, you guys, so it doesn't matter whatever it is, whatever platform he's on, we'll have all those links down below. You guys show that support, show that love. This guy took a lot of time out of his busy schedule to come and be a part of the Fraggin' and Laggin' family. So
he promised to come back another episode to tell us some juicy stories about Tauntfest and everything he happened there, you know?
So, ooh,
I'm looking forward to that.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Dude, it's an honor, it's a pleasure. Whatever podcast platform you listen to us on, make sure you guys, this is a lengthy podcast. It's better if you just download it. That way you can listen to it in your free time, whatever. And giving us a 5-star rating and you guys get out there, keep gaming and 2-tap and fragging out. Cause if not,
you're probably lagging.
Mom, get the camera. I gotta kill. Mom, I gotta kill. Oh yeah, baby. Oh, mommy, I gotta kill. Finally, after 250 games sitting in a corner, I'm dying to the gas.